Good morning. One of the deep advantages of going on a longer retreat is that you spend, you know, when you're spending days just paying attention to your breath and your body, and watching the thoughts come and go, and you have a sense of what it feels like when the thinking mind abates a little bit, and just awareness in the present moment. And then when you're out of retreat, you can carry that. You carry that intention forward, because it's so easy for us just to come and think, well, 20 minutes, half an hour a day, we're going to meditate, and we come on Sunday. But more and more, we try to carry it into our everyday activity. So, you know, you find yourself driving the car, and instead of listening to the radio or processing what your next appointment is going to be, you just practice being present. And you begin to trust that. You begin to deeply trust that place, that state of mind where you're just present. You're not analyzing, you're not thinking, you're not using that thinking mind, which is so helpful and so seductive. But you begin to trust that mind that's just present. And more and more and more you commit yourself to that throughout the day. So, I'm saying that because I would like to encourage you to find ways to sit a little bit longer. We're in the middle of our practice period, and that's what most of you have done. You decided you're going to sit just a little bit longer, extend your meditation. And that's a good commitment. Like, you may want to, beyond the practice period, maybe one day a week, for example, if you normally sit 20 minutes or a half an hour, just sit an extra 5 minutes or 10 minutes. Just push it a little bit and see what that's like. So there's a sign-up sheet for the retreat. There's a December retreat, our practice period retreat, but anybody can sign up for it. It'll be at St. Dorothy's at the 4th, 5th, and 6th. So I encourage all of you to sign up, especially this year, because it may be the only retreat we do this year. The one that we normally do in the spring, we can't find a date that works for St. Dorothy's and my and Chris's schedule. So we're looking maybe for another place, but this may be the only retreat we do this year. So I encourage you to try to make a commitment. So in light of that, I'd like to today lecture a little bit about the Anapanasati Sutta, which is the sutra on the full awareness of breathing, because that is primarily what our practice is awareness, using the breath to extend our awareness and mindfulness into all aspects of our life, our body, our mind, how the Buddha talks about this. And this is, you know, really the seminal, this one and the Satipatthana Sutta on the Four Foundations of Mindfulness are the two main sutras that we can trace right back pretty close to. We don't think they've been changed much from what Buddha disseminated. And unfortunately, these two sutras are not emphasized much in the Mahayana tradition, and that's included in the Zen. What's stated in these sutras are really the foundation of all other meditative practices that come out of it. And even Dogen in his his treatise on the Fukan Zazengi, which he gives us instructions which are pretty terse. You know, he emphasized posture, awareness of posture. Didn't say much about breath, really, you know, and about awareness of mind, letting the mind come and go. You know, he deals with it in a paragraph in terms of meditation instruction, as in these two sutras, a Buddha is pretty explicit and gives very detailed instructions about how in our meditation. And so I have found them to be tremendously helpful. I read them myself a couple times a year, and I usually try to find a time to bring forth the sutras to you. And I would particularly, you can access them either in something like this, which is an anthology of discourses from the Pali Canon by Bhikshu Bodhi, or you can do it in one of the more detailed descriptions our compendiums and the Nikayas, but I would actually recommend that you go to this book, which is Thich Nhat Hanh's book called Breathe, You Are Alive. And he gives both the traditional translation, his own translation of it, which is always very informative and helpful. He very much phrases the traditional language in everyday life. And then he gives a commentary on it, very short treatise and easily read in all 20th anniversary edition of this particular book. So it's one of the first books he put out. So let's read the sutra. So I'm going to start with the sutra on Sadhipasana, which is the four foundations of mindfulness. And I'm not going to read the sutra. I'm just going to mention it briefly. And then I'm going to go to the Anapanasati, which particularly emphasizes breath, using breath, because that sutra actually references back in a little more condensed way the four foundations. But I'll start off. Thus have I heard. So this is Ananda saying that he actually was sitting down and he was listening to Buddha. So monks would get up, they would meditate, they would take their begging bowls, they would go out into the community or to a noble's house, they would get fed, they would come back, maybe a little more meditation, and then the Buddha or one of the senior monks, Ananda or Shariputra, somebody would give a Dharma discourse, and then sometime in the evening there would be another shorter Dharma discourse. So in one of these discourses, Ananda heard this lecture from Buddha. Thus have I heard. On one occasion, the Blessed One, while living in Kulu country, which is in the town of Kurus, he thus addressed the monks. Monks, Venerable Sir, they replied, the Blessed One said this, monks, this is the one way path for the purification of beings, for the surmounting of sorrow and lamentation, for the passing away of pain and dejection, for the attainment of the true way, for the realization of enlightenment, namely the four foundations of mindfulness. What are these four? Here, monk, a monk dwells contemplating the body in the body, ardent, clearly comprehending and mindful, having subdued longing and dejection in regard to the world. He dwells, or she dwells, contemplating feelings in feelings. Feelings in feelings. Ardent, clearly comprehending, mindful, having subdued longing and dejection in regard to the world. He dwells contemplating the mind in the mind. Again, ardent, clearly comprehending. He dwells comprehending phenomena in phenomena, ardent, clearly comprehending, and mindful. So, two things. What is, you know, for years I could never figure out what did he mean, comprehending mind in mind, body in body, phenomena. What does that mean, body in body? And what that actually means is, in our practice, what we're trying to do is there's the observer and the observed. There's the mind and the object. And usually we distance ourselves. We see the object, it's a person, whatever it is, and we begin to have a commentary about what that is. And what Buddhist meditation is trying to get us to do is to see things much more in an immediate way. So seeing things in the body, or in the mind, means that you realize that your mind and the object are not separate. They're one. And that everything you add to that is what brings us into more of a dualistic perspective. The second thing which he says in each one of the four foundations of mindfulness is he's saying, pay attention to your either attraction or your rejection. So that goes to the second noble truth. There is suffering. What causes suffering? It's our tendency to either be attracted to something or to reject something. So he says, as we go through this and as we practice, we begin to see that tendency begins to abate because we're not making a discursive comment. We're beginning to just see things as they are. So that's what those two comments. And then he goes on for quite a few pages, actually. The first one he does is contemplate the mindfulness in the body. And the first one is the breath. Start with the breath. Start with what you always have access to the breath. And then begin to extend that out into all aspects of your body. So he isn't just saying paying attention to the breath and the breath of the stomach. He says pay attention to it throughout the body. He says throughout the body. Then the second thing he goes to is he says, don't just pay attention to your breath. Pay attention to the awareness of the body in all aspects and all the postures. So he says, do it while you're walking. That's why we do walking meditation. He says, do it while you're sitting. Do it while you're lying down. Do it throughout your everyday activities. Be very mindful of and using the breath to help you be mindful in all the postures of the body. And then the next, still on the body, on awareness of the body, he says, and this is there's like 2.5 pages on this, about the unattractiveness of the body. And that's the part that our contemporary Buddhist teachers, Bill once asked me, is there anything about the Buddhist teaching you kind of disagree with? And I wouldn't disagree with this, but I'd say I probably wouldn't emphasize it. Like, you know, more modern ways, you love the body, you care for the body, and you also simultaneously meditate on the transitoriness and the impermanence of the body. But Buddha goes on for some length here because in his particular time, it was important for them. Their emphasis more was on ascetic practice, on not cultivating desire, and the body was seen as a way that kind of inflames that tendency. So they would do practices like go out into charnel grounds and meditate with dead bodies being decomposing, which would be a good way to understand the impermanence of the body, and maybe not getting too attracted or putting too much emphasis on how beautiful we are or other people are. So then he goes on and he says, okay, we're doing this awareness of the body, and then the next thing we start to pay attention to is our feelings. What are our feelings? And our feelings, when our eye makes contact, we basically notice, are we attracted? Are we not attracted? Do we want to push away? Or are we neutral? Just pay attention at that level. And that's important when we're meditating. There's a noise outside. Somebody's on a chainsaw. Somebody's playing baseball. Or in our retreat, somebody was putting a sewer line in. Just notice how your mind responds to that. Positive, negative, or neutral. And the next foundation of mindfulness was contemplate the mind. Begin to notice not only is it pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral, but notice all the formations, what we call the samskaras. You know, the first one is the rupa. Let me just digress for a minute. Let me bring this for a moment into the Heart Sutra, which we're going to chant today, you know, which is done basically 500-600 years later. Remember, Avalokiteshvara says, when practicing deeply the Prajnaparamita, this awareness, perceive that all the aggregates were empty. The aggregates he's talking about are these four foundations of mindfulness. Form, rupa, feelings, awareness of feelings, vedana, you know, the formations of how we think, which are the samskaras, and perceptions, how we perceive in consciousness. Those are the aggregates that are said. And what it says here is, Avalokiteshvara, notice that all of these are empty. All these aggregates are empty. And these are the aggregates that make us up. Our body, our mind, our feelings, our perceptions, and our impulses, these samskaras, anger, jealousy, concentration, all these samskaras are what go to make us up. And they're all empty. They all arise, they all pass away. None of them have a particular solid identity. So the foundation of mindfulness of the mind, of the aggregates and then the perception, how we perceive things. How do we perceive things? So these are all the foundations of mindfulness. And then he goes on, he says, you can use these, apply these to how the eye makes contact with an object and what happens when the ear makes contact with an object and what feelings and formations arise around those things. Pay attention to that in your meditation practice. Be mindful of it. So that's the sutra in a very condensed version. I just gave you about 6 pages in a few minutes, right? But I want to read to you the next sutra, which is the sutra called the Anapanasati, which is the emphasis on the breath, primarily on the breath. So he goes on as an introduction, and he's saying, the monk, probably Ananda, says, Venerable Sir, what is the one thing which, when developed and cultivated, fulfills all the things that we need to develop for enlightenment? He says, and the Buddha says, concentration by mindfulness of breathing, Ananda, is the one thing which, when developed and cultivated, fulfills the 4 foundations of mindfulness. Mindfulness of breath. The 4 foundations of mindfulness, when developed and cultivated, fulfill the 7 factors of enlightenment. In other words, mindfulness of the breath. Through that, you extend to the 4 foundations of mindfulness, and that will bring you to the 7 factors of enlightenment. The 7 factors of enlightenment, when developed and cultivated, fulfill the true knowledge. So then he goes ahead and recapitulates in this a little bit about the 4 foundations of mindfulness. Ananda, how, Ananda, is concentration of mindfulness of breathing developed and cultivated so that it fulfills the 4 foundations of mindfulness? Here, Ananda, a monk, having gone to the forest, to the foot of a tree, to an empty hut, or to the teen annex on Sunday, sits down, having folded his legs, his or her legs, straightens the body, again the posture, straightens the body, awareness of the posture, and sets up mindfulness in front of him or her. Just mindfully breathes in, mindfully he breathes out. Breathing in, he knows, I breathe in long or I breathe in short. So you're not trying to change the breath, you're not trying to make it long or short, just like you're not trying to necessarily subdue the mental activities. Just by mindfulness, by paying attention to the breath, the breath naturally becomes a little longer and a little deeper, and the mind naturally begins to abate. And so, awareness of the breath. And then he trains, or she trains, experiencing the whole body, I will breathe in. He trains, experiencing the whole body, I breathe out. So the whole body, you begin to feel the sense of not just the breath, but the abdomen, which maybe we emphasize to begin with because it's what's most accessible to us, is the movement of the belly. He trains, tranquilizing the body formations, I breathe in. He trains, tranquilizing the body formations, I breathe out. So when you experience tension in your chest, when you experience a tightness in your stomach, or a dis-ease in your stomach, you use the breath. You actually move the breath into the body, and you use it, he says, you use it to tranquilize the body formations. You also use it when you have mental formations around the physical experiences. You use the breath and the awareness and the calmness to begin to tranquilize this. To actually, you could use the word heal. He trains thus. This is a great word. Experiencing rapture, I breathe in. He trains thus. Experiencing rapture, I breathe out. So rapture is kind of a great word, right? That's kind of an intense word for us. You know, I always say, I'm a little more accessible, maybe calmness or peace. Buddha says, you're, you know, if you stay with this practice, you're He uses the word rapture. And so this is an important point that I really appreciate about Thich Nhat Hanh. Sometimes we think of meditation as something we have to do. You know, like I was talking to somebody just recently about, it's like brushing our teeth. You know, we got have to do it, and it's, we're going to use it to change ourselves. And what Thich Nhat Hanh emphasizes, and I think Dogen emphasizes in our practices, you know, think about meditation as a way to just be alive, to cultivate within yourself a sense of joy and happiness and peace that you always have. It's always there. It's always accessible. It may be fleeting, but you can always access it. And that's what the Buddha is saying here, is he's beginning to emphasize now a sense of the joy and freedom and aliveness that comes in our meditation. He trains thus, experiencing rapture, I breathe in. He trains thus, experiencing rapture, I breathe out. He trains experiencing happiness. I will breathe in. Experiencing happiness, I breathe out. And then, experiencing the mental formations, I breathe in. So using breathing in, I notice my mental state. Breathing in, I notice that I'm distracted. Breathing out, I notice I'm distracted. Breathing in, I notice that I have an element of irritation. Breathing out, I notice an element of irritation. Breathing in, I notice that I'm sleepy. Breathing out, I notice I'm sleeping. I don't have much energy. Experiencing the mental formations, I breathe out. He trains thus, tranquilizing the mental formations, I breathe in. He uses the word tranquilizing. So if your mind is irritated, upset, and angry, you breathe in with it. You notice it. And in that process, it begins to abate. You let it go. You practice letting it go. You're tranquilizing. You're calming it. You're tranquilizing it. He trains thus, experiencing the mind I breathe in. He trains thus, experiencing the mind I breathe out. Then he says, training thus, gladdening the mind I breathe in. He trains thus, gladdening the mind I breathe out. So when we do, occasionally when we decide to be more discursive, when we do, say, some metta meditation, and we say, may I be peaceful and at ease. May I be happy. So what we're doing, that metta practice is embedded in this particular sutta. It's saying you can do it quietly or you can do it a little more cognitively. You can actually say that to remind yourself. Then he says, concentrating the mind, I breathe in. Concentrating the mind, I breathe out. Liberating the mind, I breathe in. He trains liberating the mind, I breathe out. And thus he trains contemplating impermanence, I breathe in. So he uses the word contemplating. So there's almost a little bit of a cognitive quality here. So you're noticing and you're saying now, during this meditation, I'm going to actually pay attention to the fact of the impermanence of my body sensations and my mental process. I'm actually going to try to deepen my meditation. You can actually say that intellectually to yourself. And then prove it to yourself. You're sitting there and you're meditating. Well, sure enough, my thoughts are going. Well, sure enough, my body sensations arise and they pass away. So he's encouraging us to do that kind of investigation, or what we would say is vipassana. So traditionally, the first part of the sutra, awareness of the body, awareness of the breath, that's more what we call shamatha practice, which is just concentrating, calming the mind down so we can really pay attention. Now, in the later part of the sutra, he's saying we're going to shift over to vipassana. We're actually going to start to notice, giving this concentrated mind, we're going to start to notice that things do arise. They do pass away. There's nothing you can hang on to. Contemplating impermanence, I breathe out. He trains thus, contemplating fading away, I will breathe in. He trains thus, contemplating fading away, I breathe out. He trains thus, contemplating cessation, I breathe in. He trains thus, contemplating cessation, I breathe out. He trains thus, contemplatives, relinquishment. So it's using all these adjectives to encourage you to see the ephemeralness of the thinking process and the body process. Whensoever Ananda monk, when breathing in long, knows I breathe in long, he trains, tranquilizing the body formations I breathe out. So he's kind of repeating. This is often, remember, the monks couldn't read or write. So the way they learned these sutras is they had to repeat it. So the sutras, traditional sutras, are done in a repetitive manner. That's why they repeat it and repeat it and repeat it so you can learn. And he goes through, experiencing rapture, I breathe in. Experiencing, tranquilizing the mental formations, I breathe out. On that occasion, the monk dwells, contemplating feelings and feelings, ardent, clearly comprehending, mindful, having subdued longing and dejection. So here he's bringing in language from the other sutra, which was the Satipatthana Sutra on the Four Foundations. He's bringing those in. And so he goes through these. And then he goes, if you do this, if you pay attention to the breath this way, then will arise the seven factors of enlightenment. And what are the seven factors of enlightenment? Well, the first is mindfulness. You create the faculty of mindfulness. By breathing in and breathing out, you begin to be more mindful. Then he says, what happens next is you create the factor of enlightenment of discrimination. In other words, you begin to see how what's going on, what kind of mental states you have. If you're angry, you know you're angry. If you're sad, you know you're sad. So you bring forth the mental factor of discrimination. You actually identify what's going on. You know, later on, after this sutra, the monks spent 200 or 300 years and they developed the whole system of actually categorizing your mental formations. It's called the Abhidharma. And most of them, there's 51 different classifications of how you think. And there were whole schools of Buddhism that emphasized this. And it's based on this kind of discrimination. You know what mental state you're in. Are you in a positive mental state, which is an akushala state, or are you in a negative state, which was a unkushala state, which means, and that's carried forward, for example, when we study the Lojong teachings. You're aware of when you're in those mental states that cause you problems, and you apply the antidotes based on these, on this particular sutra. Then the next factor of enlightenment comes up is the factor of energy. So mindfulness, you begin to discriminate, you begin to abate and tranquilize those mental formations, and what you notice is that energy arises. You begin to have more energy, and you actually can notice that in a meditation retreat, a longer retreat. You actually need less sleep. You are sleeping less. And actually dreaming less, usually, if you meditate a lot, because you're actually processing stuff more in your meditative state. So energy arises. And then when energy arises, the next factor of enlightenment happens, which is the one we're all looking for, which is rapture, right? We'd all like to... Does that mean? I think it is. This is the second time this has happened. One. Susan, can you go over and find it and just turn it on? Sorry. So energy arises. And then rapture arises. And then after rapture arises, it's interesting the state, then tranquility arises. After the factor of enlightenment of tranquility arises, concentration arises. And after concentration arises, equanimity. So he's saying through just this simple process of paying attention to the breath and the body, do it long enough with enough sincere intention that you will experience the seven factors of enlightenment. I wanted to go and so basically what these can be done, and this is what's nice about this book, is Thich Nhat Hanh actually breaks them down into the 16 things that he's saying in the sutra. There's 16 points that you pay attention to. So again, just to reiterate, the first four have to do with the body and usually have to do with developing a sense of concentration using the breath. Breathing in a long breath, I know, a short breath. Breathing in, I'm aware of my whole body. Breathing in, I calm my body. So these are all the first four. Then the second four have to do more with feelings. So breathing in, I experience joy. I know whether I'm experiencing joy. Breathing out, I experience joy. I experience happiness. I know if I'm experiencing happiness. Breathing in, I am aware of the feeling that is now present. Breathing out, I'm aware of the feeling that is now present. That's Thich Nhat Hanh's. So these are the breathing in, I calm the feeling that is now present. Breathing out, I calm the feeling. So that's the second set of four. Body first, feelings are next, aware, tranquilizing. Then the next four is you're more aware of the mental formations. This is kind of a subtle but kind of an important point. So in this early sutra, what the early Buddhists did is they categorized these different formations. You know, there's body formations, there's mental formations, you know, and then there's the samskaras, mental thoughts. And they thought of them as kind of distinct. And what the Heart Sutra is saying is, 400 years later, they noticed that these aren't distinct. They're all empty. They all include each other. So all, any one of these aggregates include all the other aggregates. So they just extended this whole Mahayana concept of non-duality to these original teachings. And that had actually very profound influence in terms of how meditation was studied. So you both can break things down, but you want to think of them as all together, that they all include, you know, they all, like the samskara of mental formations or feeling, include all the other ones. They're all together. So body first, then feelings, then the mind, paying attention to the mind. Breathing in, I am aware of the activity of the mind that is now present. Breathing out, I am aware of the activity of the mind that is now present. Breathing in, I make the activity of my mind happy. Breathing out, I make the activity of my mind happy. Breathing in, I bring right concentration to bear on the activity of my mind. This is Thich Nhat Hanh's translations now. And then the last four have to do with impermanence. So you concentrate, you pay attention to the mind, you pay attention to the body, pay attention to the mental formations, and in doing that, the last four deepen your understanding of impermanence. So he says, breathing in, I observe the impermanent nature of all dharmas. Breathing out, I observe the impermanent nature of all dharmas, which means mind making contact with an object, that's a dharma, that experience. Breathing in, I observe the letting go of all dharmas. Breathing out, I observe the letting go of all dharmas. Breathing in, I observe no craving with regard to the dharmas. Because you're letting them go, you see that they're impermanent. There's nothing to be attached to, which is the very foundation is the foundation of the concept of emptiness. Because of all dharmas, of everything that you think about, arises and passes away, there's nothing that has an individual identity. Nothing has an individual permanent identity. We're all just in that condition together. We're all one in that condition. And that's why we're all interrelated. That's where they make that next jump in the Heart Sutra, where we say, it's all empty. We're all together. Nothing is separate. Let's emphasize the togetherness rather than the separateness. Breathing in, I observe the letting go of dharmas. Breathing out, I observe the letting go of all dharmas. So, and the way Thich Nhat Hanh ends, he says, Bhikshus, this is the practice of conscious breathing. whose function is to calm the body and mind, to bring about right mindfulness, looking deeply and clear and single-minded perception, so that the practitioner is in a position to realize all the Dharma doors that lead to the fruit of nirvana. So beautifully commented on and translated. I highly recommend you read this. This is all his books, like commentary on the Diamond Sutra and the Heart Sutra. Makes it extremely accessible and understanding. And I don't, you knew, probably knew that he, Thich Nhat Hanh, suffered a really debilitating stroke. He's just starting to come back. I think he's in a hospital in the Bay Area and has been. And so we'll do a well-being ceremony for him. I did hand out, there's some handouts. This is a meditation I've been doing for 30 years. And I do it almost every day. And what it basically is it's a summary of the Satipatthana Sutra. In these four lines, he's summarizing all these 16 points. And so when I start off, I've memorized them. You can take a copy if you'd like. In and out, the body, the breath. Calm, ease. That's the next point, right? You're breathing in, you're calming the body formations. Deep, he uses the word deep because he uses that because I think it means you need to look deeply into your mental formations, deeply into how they arise and pass. So deep, again, relax. You're relaxing. This is a practice of peace and joy and relaxation. Smile, again, bringing that sense that of joy and happiness. It's mentioned many times in the Satipatthana. And release. Again, those last four where you're releasing the mental formations and then summarizing them all. Present moment, in this moment, wonderful moment. Because the present moment is a wonderful moment. Even though you're experiencing some difficulty or pain, the potentiality. So this is a beautiful summation. I do it and will help to remind you this is based on the Satipatthana and the Four Foundations of Mindfulness. So I give these to you and I hope you can incorporate. You could start your meditation practice with these. Just saying them two or three times will help you begin to calm the mind down.